I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we had a conversation with Bart Campolo. He is a humanist chaplain at USC, and he is the co-author of a book, Why I Left, Why I Stayed, which he wrote with his father, Tony Campolo. And by the way, the subtitle is Conversations on Christianity Between an Evangelical Father and His Humanist Son. Bart was raised in a Christian home by Tony. At the age of 50, he announces to his father and mother that he and his wife are no longer Christian, but are atheists. Well, as you can imagine, there were challenges on all sides. But what came of this challenge was the book, Why I Left, Why I Stayed. We thought it was a good idea to speak with Bart last week, and as I say, we're speaking with Tony this week. Tony is an author, pastor, and speaker, a Christian teacher, and professor emeritus of sociology at Eastern University. He's written over 30 books, including 20 Hot Potatoes, Let Me Tell You a Story, It's Friday, But Sunday's Coming, and A Reasonable Faith. He is also the co-founder of Red Letter Christians. And we welcome to Common Threads, Tony Campolo. Hello, Tony.
Hello, and I'm glad to be your guest.
Thank you. Actually, you know something, Tony? You were our guest. I would not expect you to remember this with all of the media that you do, but I think we had you on, I'm going to guess, at least a dozen years ago. It could be as long as maybe even 15 years.
I've been around a long time.
I know you have. And when we essentially had a conversation about your journey as a progressive evangelical Christian, you're one of those evangelicals that confuses all of us because we think we know what an evangelical is. We think we know how evangelicals vote, and we think we know how what issues are important to evangelicals. And then we talked to Tony Campolo, and he says, not all the time.
Yeah, there's a great tendency for people to confuse evangelicals with a sector of evangelicalism, namely white evangelicals. They have a very conservative social agenda. African-American evangelicals, Hispanic evangelicals, they are pretty progressive in their social values. So a lot of confusion exists out there. I happen to have an evangelical theology, but my social concerns move me away from where most white evangelicals stand these days.
Right, I understand that. I would imagine that since probably during the campaign and now past the election and into the current administration, I imagine you're probably a busy guy.
We are busy. We are trying to, in fact, get people focused on what we call the red letters of the Bible. The old Bibles had the words of Jesus highlighted in red letters. And we are trying to get Christians to say, hey, it's about time we pay attention to the radical lifestyle that Jesus taught. The church preaches theology. It's not about to say the things that Jesus said. If you want to be my disciple, he said, sell what you have and give it to the poor and take up the cross and follow me. Many of us don't like the Sermon on the Mount. Many evangelicals say, what do you mean turn the other cheek? And as this political campaign has emerged, we have trouble reconciling Donald Trump's toughness with the theology of Jesus, as in the Beatitudes, where he calls upon us to be meek, to overcome evil with good, where he calls upon us to shy away from violence of all kinds. So we're having our hard days these days.
I would imagine so. The last time I spoke to you, I remember one thing very clearly, and again, being about a dozen years ago or so, I wouldn't expect you to remember, but we were talking, among other things, about gay relationships and gays in the church and your understanding, your belief about homosexuality, etc. And I recall that you said that your wife was a little bit more at that time progressive than you, maybe even a lot more progressive. That I can't remember. But what, does that sound like something that you would have said?
That sounds like something that people ask me about, because for a long while, my wife and I had a dialogue on this issue, she being much more conservative than I am. I have to say that over the last couple of years, as I have come to know gay people closely, gotten to know gay couples, I have modified my position and become a lot more soft on the issue of gays.
So let's talk about the book. As I mentioned, I had a really excellent conversation with your son. I can imagine you're very proud of him. Tell us about how this book happened. Now, I'll tell you this, and you can certainly add to it. I did ask Bart about it was Thanksgiving, I think. Was it on Thanksgiving? Mm-hmm. Yeah, on Thanksgiving.
A couple of years ago,
he dropped the bomb that he no longer was a Christian and no longer believed in God. And there were tears, there was concern, and all of that. Tell us your side of that story.
Well, the context, it has to be understood. This boy, this son of mine, was not just a Christian, and not just a believer. He was a dedicated disciple of Christ and of the church. He had started a mission organization called Mission Year, and hundreds of young men and women had been challenged into Christian ministries, into the mission field, because of his leadership in that role. He was a popular speaker on the evangelical circle. I constantly meet people who say, I was led into a personal relationship with Christ because of your son's preaching. Bart was instrumental in bringing me to where I am as a servant of Jesus Christ today. In addition to that, he worked with me for about 15 years in the organization that I was running at that time, the Evangelical Association for the Promotion of Education. So he was a colleague, a co-worker, an evangelist, a writer. I mean, on all of a sudden, for this high-profile Christian, my son, to suddenly say to me, guess what, Dad? I don't believe in God anymore. I mean, it was a bombshell. And needless to say, when you're where I am as a Christian, it was like a knife went into me. I mean, I felt pain go to my toes and to the top of my head. So it was a very hard pill to swallow.
And what was your response to him, the immediate response?
My immediate response was silence. I didn't know what to say. We chatted after that. I don't know what I said because I was in a state of shock. But when he left the room, I said with my wife, the one thing we cannot do. And she said, certainly, this is the one thing we cannot do. We cannot cut off relationships. We have to stay close to our son. This is our son. We love him. The fact that he isn't where we are in beliefs, in his Christian experience, in his religion, cannot be a barrier to our relationship as parents to a child. And so we resolved to maintain a very close relationship with him. In addition to that, I thought, a week from now, I'm going on a preaching tour in the United Kingdom. I'll be away for 5 days. And I looked at him and I said, Bart, I'm going to be in England, and I'll be traveling from place to place by train. We'll have coffee in the afternoon. Why don't you come along and we'll talk about this? We'll see if we can come to some deeper understanding of our respective points of view. And so for about 5 days, at least 4 or 5 hours a day, we talked. And as we talked, it became pretty evident that the conversations we were having were the kind of conversations that parents and children should have if a barrier of faith comes between them. We thought it would be good to model for other people how a father and a son can talk to each other when such an announcement as Bart made has been made. And so it was out of that that we came up with this idea of writing the book, Why I Left, Why I Stayed. wherein he could explain himself to me as to why he little by little moved away from the faith that we had reared him in, and that we could model how a father and a son can talk to each other in the midst of such a chasm that's been created between them so far as their beliefs are concerned.
In your conversations, did you come to a point where clearly you disagree with him, otherwise the book would be called Why I Left, Why I Left?
Yeah.
Do you understand what his issues are?
I think I do, and I think he is convinced that I understand him. I think he understands me, and he understands my concerns. And that, I think, is very, very important. That when something like this happens, and incidentally, let me just break here and say that I have five friends who meet with me about every other week. We have breakfast together and talk about what's going on in our lives. All of them are Christian leaders. When I told them what had happened between Bart and me, there was dead silence. And then one of them said, I think you're going to make honest men out of the rest of us. We went around the circle, and every one of them had at least one child who had been reared in the Christian faith and had walked away from it. So what has gone on between Bart and myself is not unusual. It's happening all over the place. I mean, you know from your studies that the number of young people, when asked about religious affiliation, say, I have none. The people who call themselves non-affiliated with religion is the fastest growing segment in the religious world today. And so that's why we thought the book would be helpful. What did he say to me to help me understand where he was and how he got there, and what I had said to him as I challenged him to come back to the faith? We didn't have what we would call an argument for a very simple reason. I have never met anybody who became a Christian or came back to Jesus because he or she lost an argument. Think about that. When was the last time you argued somebody into the Christian faith? It's not the way it happens. People are brought back to faith. People do become believers and disciples of Jesus, or whatever their religious affiliation may be. But it's not that they are overpowered by an argument. There are other things that bring people back. And one of them is that loving understanding, empathy with the other person. I think that's the way Jesus functioned. He didn't argue with people. He empathized with people. He connected with people emotionally and spiritually. And that's what Bart and I tried to do with each other. We tried to connect with each other emotionally and spiritually, even across the line. You labeled him an atheist. And that's probably something he would say, I am not. I am a believer. I believe in the human spirit. I don't believe in the supernatural. But when you listened to him, as you did, you probably found that he had all the values of a religious person, and that the way in which he functioned at the University of Southern California, where he's the humanist chaplain, you sensed that he had deep spiritual values and deep spiritual connectedness. He just did not believe that these spiritual values and these connected relationships with students at USC were in any way supernatural. He did not have a supernatural component to his faith. So he calls himself a humanist rather than an atheist, and you probably got that out of him.
Yes, I did. You're correct. I want to mention for people just tuning in that you're listening to WGVU. The program is Common Threads. I'm Fred Stella. And with me today is Tony Campolo. He is the co-author, along with his son, Bart Campolo, of the book Why I Left, Why I Stayed, Conversations on Christianity Between an Evangelical Father and His Humanist Son. Now, here's a question that I asked Bart last week, and he said I should probably talk to you about it. Having an evangelical theology, and I believe that your theology is pretty Baptist. Am I correct?
Well, I don't know whether Baptist is a good word to use anymore, but it's basically historically Baptist. Yes, I believe the following things. I believe in the doctrines that you read about in the Apostles' Creed. I believe that the Bible is no ordinary book. I believe that the writers were imbued by the Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit, who guided their writings so that what they produced was an infallible guide for faith and practice. And I believe that the Jesus, the historical Jesus that we believe in, was resurrected from the grave, is alive, and is spiritually present here and now. And I invite people into a personal relationship with that Jesus. That's what my preaching is about, to invite people to come to know Jesus, not as a historical figure, but as a person whom they can invite to invade their being and transform them from within. Well, that's a traditional evangelical theology. That's where I come from.
Yes, yes, exactly. So, coming from that theology, now, there are different takes on what I'm about to say, but coming from the theology that I believe you hold, if Bart was saved when he was in high school, even though he is a humanist now, would you expect to see him in heaven?
Well, that's a strong question. Let me tell you the answer, yes, and I'll tell you why. I believe that at the end of life, Jesus confronts us with himself in all of his glory. And at that point, I think when Jesus comes face to face with the resurrected Jesus, he will have an opportunity in that existential encounter to say, I'm sorry I rejected you. I want to embrace you now. I think that Jesus gives us one more chance at the end of life. And that goes for all the religions of the world. I think that Jesus confronts every person in his magnificence and in his glory and asks, let me embrace you and love you now. Will you surrender to my love at this point? I think that I can make that case biblically. In 1 John 6:15, for instance, it says that, Satan is the ruler of this world. It says very carefully in the book of, First John particularly, there are places where it says that Jesus will confront us at the end of life. And it says in the Apostles' Creed, though we descend into hell, lo, thou art there. That Christ will chase us down the labyrinths of time and find us where we are and confront us with himself. And so we will have a chance, every person will have a chance, to accept and reject Jesus in the end. So I expect that Bart would say yes to Jesus with such an encounter. The reason why he's turned away from the faith is not that he's against Jesus. It's that the whole thing became unreal to him as he embraced naturalism and gave up any belief in the supernatural. And at the end of life, when the supernatural impinges on him, I think that he will in fact say yes.
So, from what you're saying, it's not that he was once saved. You're saying that even if he wasn't, if he didn't go through that conversion experience in high school, and you're also saying that the Buddhist and the Muslim and everyone else will all have this opportunity at the moment of death.
I think the Bible says he does not leave himself without a witness to any person. And I think if you were to ask Bart this question, and you probably did, did you have a genuine spiritual experience with Jesus back when you were in high school? He would say, yes, I did.
Yes, we did talk about that.
I did have that experience, but it has become unreal to me. And in that unreality, I have left the faith. So he had an experience. There are those who say, once you have an experience with Jesus, you can't ever lose it. You can't ever drift away from it. I disagree. I believe that one can slip away from Jesus. And I've known so many people, every pastor of every church knows people who once were alive in spiritual things concerning Christianity who have drifted away. He would say, I was there and I lost it. And I don't think I'm ever going to find it again. And the difference between us is that I'm saying, in the words of Yogi Berra, it ain't over till it's over. And that I believe that there will be a time when Bart will be confronted by the spiritual Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, and that he will be overawed by that love and that empathy that Christ has for him and will want to come back to the faith.
By the way, in the book, while the vast majority of the book, the body of the book, is written by you and Bart, your wife, Peggy, writes a wonderful foreword. And I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about her reaction to everything. By everything, I mean not just the announcement that we are no longer Christians, but how it has proceeded and come to this point where you have a book together.
Yes. Well, let me respond by saying the book's been out by a couple of weeks, and the people who have read it said, oh, it was such a wonderful conversation between you and your son. And then they always stop and say, and that introduction that your wife read, that was the best part of the book. And she deals with two men, a 50-year-old son who has walked away from Christianity, and a 82-year-old father who continues to love Jesus passionately and preaches him with great enthusiasm. How do I, the wife, the mother, caught between these two men, deal with it? And she affirms both of us and does it in such a gracious and loving way. And she doesn't get into theology. She says, this is about love. This is about loving my son and at the same time loving my husband and praying and hoping that their love for each other will bring them into a harmonious relationship.
I have to say that probably many of us would be jealous. Sons with fathers, the ability to have the quality and the quantity of time he had from you, particularly when riding the rails in England, and to be have hours and hours to just talk about everything. And so while he was asking you questions, and obviously you asked him questions too, he was asking you to defend your faith. And I'm sure he wasn't doing it in a charged manner, but you were ultimately having to come up with answers to questions that were challenging to him that led him away from his religion. I'm wondering, did this make you a better pastor? Did the exercise strengthen you?
Well, it certainly made me a lot more respectful of people who, like Bart, have left the faith. You know, I often dismiss their skepticism and their non-belief in a cavalier fashion. And with Bart, I realized the intense sincerity, the great emotional turmoil that he had to endure as he went through this transition from believer to non-believer. And let me just say, you're right, I had the luxury of this time. My advice to fathers who find that their sons or their daughters have drifted away from the faith and say, gee, I wish I had the time that Tony had, is very simple. This is so important and of such ultimate concern that you ought to take a week off of work. You ought to take a couple of weeks off and go someplace with your son and daughter and so that you can listen to each other and talk to each other in depth. Yes, we did have the luxury of doing this while I was on a speaking tour in England. But let me just say, every parent should recognize that this is so important. If I have to stop work for a week, if I have to stop school for a week, I'm going to do it. We need to talk to each other. This is father-son or father-daughter relationships that are at stake here, and we need to spend time. And it happened that it worked out nicely for me. But if it hadn't, I know what I would have to do. I would have to say, Bart, you pick the week. But we're going to take a week and go off someplace and just the two of us talk about this. This is not a luxury. This is a necessity.
I can only imagine that it is something that will be a part of him for the rest of his life. Certainly, you as well. That's again, that is a magnificent example of parenthood. It really is, especially today, as you say, when people are so invested in their careers and they don't necessarily see things like this as a priority. So, do you think that this experience is going to broaden your ministry to where people will be coming to you? Maybe they already have coming to you as someone who can walk with them on their journey when they have issues with family, as you did.
The answer to that very important question is this. But before Bart made his confession of non-belief, it was a regular thing for parents to call me on the phone or to come to my office for a meeting and say, my child has left the faith in which I reared the child. How can I get him back? It was happening long before this and happening with great frequency. The frequency has not changed. Parents are still coming and still asking the same question. How can I get my child back into a good relationship with Jesus, back into a good relationship with God? And the thing that has changed is that I react emotionally very differently than I did before it was my son. It was a sense that I began to feel the hurt and the pain and the agony of people who are deeply committed to their faith to have a son or a daughter walk away from it. I have Jewish friends whose children have left the faith, and they have the same kind of agony that I have. The thing that is of ultimate concern in my life is my relationship with Jesus. And I'm looking at my son, who will confess that he once had a relationship with Jesus, at least he thought he had, and now it's no more. And I understand the pain of those parents. So the fact that parents come to me and talk about this is not new. I get more parents talking to me about this than anything else.
Tony, I want to thank you so much for your time here. We're out of time at the moment, but this has been a great conversation, and I wish you the very best with your book and your life with your wife and son, Bart. It's been great.
I thank you for that, and I hope that people get the book, Why I Left, Why I Stayed, because I think it will help to carry on the conversation that we have had with each other this last half hour. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Common Threads. I'm Fred Stella, my guest, Tony Campolo. Please join us again next week here on WGVU.